You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Tyler.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? This is the Element Truck Driving Podcast. I'm your host, Casey Smith. Actually, we're driving a Volkswagen Atlas. If you've seen us blazing down the roads of Florida, you know which one it was. It was the Black Atlas that has a ton of nasty stuff on the outside. This podcast is brought to you by First Light Gear. I was wearing a new piece of First Light Gear that you may have an opportunity to take a look at here coming this summer when I shot my Osceola turkey the other week. You probably heard that story on the podcast last week. If you haven't tuned into that, my buddy Tyler Jones is riding in the navigation seat over here. Tyler,
I am the super navigator.
Where are we headed, navigator?
Man, we are headed to back to the continental U.S., I guess you'd say.
Yeah, that's right, man. Yeah. Where are we headed specifically?
Where were we headed?
Well, no, where are we headed right now specifically?
We're headed to Taco Bell.
Woo! That was a peak for sure. I don't know if y'all heard
it. That's right.
Sometimes I was excited, man.
Yeah, it's been a minute since you
had
Taco Bell.
Probably since coming back from South Dakota.
Let me tell you something. If you spend money, it's all right. If you don't, it's still going to be that old nasty.
You know what I mean? You can't walk away from Taco Bell with a $5 meal anymore.
No.
Like, you got to spend like upwards of $8.50 or $9.
Man, if you ain't eating the cheesy gordita crunch, you ain't living.
It ain't Taco Bell.
Hey, they have a new thing called the stacker. It's legit.
Isn't that just like a folded quesadilla?
It is. Pretty much.
I saw it.
So yeah. If you're
$2.39 though.
If you're a little thrown aback right now, our friends Eric and Brian are here in the back seats with us. They're actually the not so super navigators, and they are hanging out. Brian, say hi.
Hi,
Eric.
Hey.
We had a very essential moment today where we were navigating, and pretty much that's what we've done for the last week.
We did
navigate.
Last night too.
Florida is hard to navigate. I'm learning, and we have this interface of Onyx Maps and Google Maps and all these other things that we're cross referencing and trying to get to places. And Brian sent me an Onyx map pin to the boat ramp that we were needing to go to. But it just so happens that that was 7 miles behind us instead of the one that we actually need to go to that's 5 miles in front of us. But I'll give Brian a caveat.
Wrong bridge, guys.
It all looks the same.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell.
It is.
And it's hard.
Have we even told them where we are?
No, we haven't. Now, I like to bury the lead.
Okay. Just making sure.
Yeah, man. You gotta make them want it.
Making sure you're.
Are you excited to tell people though?
I mean, I don't know, man. I am excited to tell them. Yeah, for sure.
All right,
man.
Tell them what's up,
guys. we somehow ended up in the Florida Keys in Pop's boat.
Whoa.
It's been crazy.
Pop's boat did pretty good.
Yeah, it did. Of course it did, man.
I mean, the human bilge pump, Brian Bostic, did a good job. I mean, we didn't have any technical issues at all, which is, you know, top notch.
Yeah.
So, anytime, I got a little story for y'all. Anytime Pop's boat has gone to the ocean, the next trip at home, it has blown the motor.
Oh.
So, we got to not do that this go around. I'll give you this. The motor on it now is a better motor than the other two that has blown. So, I feel better about our situation on that.
You know, if we wanted to go buy a air gun at Walmart tonight, we could wake up early in the morning and run that thing through some fresh water, shoot an iguana or two.
Man, we could. Brian's got that pole spear.
Now you're thinking.
True.
Dude.
Hey, it's happening.
Hey, I tell you this much, they better not be one in the yard. So we haven't actually told too much about that.
I don't think we have.
So y'all know we turkey hunted. But before we turkey hunted.
Do they?
Yeah, we did podcast
right.
with Matt
that's
the
right.
other day.
That's right.
I'm assuming that's out. I haven't checked.
But, yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah, I think it is.
It'll be out before this one comes out.
So we haven't told them what transpired previous to, but they know all about the turkey hunt.
Yeah. So we made a Florida just expedition. We tried to do as many things in South Florida as we could. And actually, before we went turkey hunting, we flew down and met the guys who had brought Pop's boat and to South Florida. And
they did a great job.
They did a great
job. They only lost one thing on the way, Eric.
This is the most expensive cooler you can buy.
Yeah. Michael was driving the whole way, and I'll give him credit. He drove the whole way, but I kind of made remarks along the way, like, you want me to drive? But he was like, I got this. But
his story was different. He said you didn't offer ever.
No, I did, but it was more like, your driving's not very good. You want me to take over? It was right after the Yeti incident. But we were going like 70, hit a double bump, and then Michael just goes, oh, boy, the Yeti's flying.
We call that a dump around here.
The double dump.
And so we turned around. We got like 2 miles down, found an exit, turned around, and saw it there. And then we got to the next exit, turned around to try to get it, and it was already gone.
Yeah. I don't really blame people, though.
Yeah.
You know?
Free Yeti on the side of the road.
Yeah. I mean, what are you going to do? Drive by it and be like, well, I hope the people who lost it find it again. You know, it's just, I don't know.
I think I'd leave it, man.
Yeah, well, I don't usually just like to stop and pick up stuff on the side of the road on the interstate. It's kind of my deal. It's like a little dangerous, you know?
Yeah.
But to travel 2,000 miles across country and to lose just a cooler is successful.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, don't give them a caveat for this trip home.
We almost hit a cooler.
Yeah, the other night, me and Brian almost hit
one. Did y'all?
We hit a tire that flew off a trailer.
I remember that.
It's been quite the expedition
Your
across
truck,
Florida.
Which is kind of like an expedition, but has a bed. Your truck had, like, some error code thing, too.
It has a trailer fault. Pop's boat is really messing with the electrical system on that truck.
Man, that's weird.
That might be it.
It might have been that wiring that we did before.
Could have been. You know, I have experience with hauling boats a long way across the country. And, well, I say across our state, which is also a long way across the country. Like, boat wiring kind of messes with fuses and stuff sometimes. And just the electrics on vehicles. So, that's probably why.
Does everybody know what Pop's boat is?
Yeah.
That's a good question because...
We need to describe Pop's boat.
There's a video...
There's a big old dead shark.
Landed on the... There was a dead shark over there?
No, it's one of those stupid tourist things.
There's a video on the Meat Eater channel of us hunting pigs on some public with shotguns with your dad, Butch, and we're hunting out of Pop's boat.
Mm-hmm.
And Pop's boat... Explain what Pop's boat is.
Pop's boat is a commercial... flat bottom boat. I checked it the other day. It's only 17 foot long. I always thought it was 19, but it's 17.
I was looking at it earlier today and I was like, man, I think I don't want to, you know, go against what you were saying, but I mean, I'd like to measure
I measured it here while back and learned that it's only 17 foot long. It's aluminum flat bottom boat, but it's got a what do you call it?
Like, the width on it is really big.
Yeah.
17 foot long and 17 foot wide.
Yeah. It's, it's I think it's like yeah. 60. No, 60 be 5 foot, right? So it's like 66.
I think it's 72. Wide.
Nah, I don't think it. I thought
dude,
it was 2.
Dude, I think but, it might okay. be 2 because you measure it to the gunnels, right?
I measured it on the outside. I measured from edge to edge. But out there, or, you know, right in the middle, it might be just a little wider still. You measured the bottom, not the top. I believe. But on the top, for sure, it's over 6 foot.
Yeah.
So it's not like a shallow well, but it's not a deep well either. It, you know, it's got some side to it. It's just the perfect roughing it boat, you know. It ain't going to win a beauty contest, but it's heavy duty.
Name about 3 or 5 places Pop's boat's been.
Pop's boat has been to Venice, Louisiana. Pop's boat has been to... South Texas a few times. It went to South Padre Island. Pop's boat has been to Arkansas on a deer hunting trip with Clay Newcomb. You mm-hmm. might have seen on the Meat Eater channel. And then Pop's boat has probably circumnavigated the globe on Lake Fork alone. So my granddad retired it. You know, he did the 63-year-old Social Security, but then he kind of did some side jobs and stuff for a while. But around about 70, he retired kind of for good. And from about 70, at the age of 70, probably maybe like 69 or 8, I don't know. For about 10 years straight there, he fished 4 to 5 times a week and took that boat between Cooper Lake and Lake Fork mostly. A whole bunch. Oh, we took that to the White River in Arkansas one time and trout fish, too.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So it's
that's kind of what them White River boats look like. It's kind of yeah. they're a little more narrow usually, but mm-hmm. there's flat bottoms.
Yeah.
And that boat, man, has served us well. We've put pigs in it and ducks in it and dirt deer in it and all kinds of fish.
I want to drive a four-wheeler in it. I want to, like, put a four-wheeler in there. Like, find a reason, like, oh, we need to take the four-wheeler over there, you know?
I got an idea on that, but I can't Do say you? It. Can't okay. say it loud.
Good. Well,
it might be a place that somebody could snoop.
I think I feel real confident that it would work with, like, yeah. two guys in a four-wheeler. I don't think you'd have a problem at all. Four-wheeler. I wouldn't do, like, a big one, you know?
Yeah. So Pop's boat now has been within 25 miles of the most southern point in the U.S.
Yeah.
And has fished miles out from the Florida Keys, and we've put...
It's been in the Atlantic now,
It's been in the Atlantic. We put grouper. We've put...
Uh-oh. Somebody's getting stopped behind us. I don't think it's our crew, though.
No, it's not. Uh-uh. We've put grouper in the boat. We've put snapper in the boat. We put... all kinds of little tiny fishes in the boat.
Mm-hmm.
What else we put in there?
Jack crevalle.
Yep.
Barracuda.
Hogfish. Yeah,
barracudas, hogfish. I caught my first hogfish today. That was wild.
Yep.
Iguanas.
Iguanas.
We'll put iguanas in the boat.
Let's talk about that a little bit, man. Yeah, man.
Mine, cichlids.
Yeah.
Yellowjacks.
Peacock bass.
Peacock bass. Man, I forgot how many fish we caught on this trip.
What a trip.
Yeah, what a trip, man.
So the first evening we got here... we all met up, at least. The crew met us, and we put the boat in on one of these here canals in Florida and ran up and down it and did a little iguana hunting, kind of messing around, just kind of getting a feel for the place. And then we decided to do a little bit of fishing at the end of the day. And sure enough, I happened into my first and only peacock bass. Couldn't hardly believe it.
Man, I was jelly.
It hit... the most classic of lures, and it makes me real happy, because this might be the only time this has ever happened. I don't know. You know, it might be happening in South Florida more often, I think. But I caught a peacock bass on a beetle spin, and I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, it's they ain't a lot of people going to, the Amazon River Basin and throwing beetle spins for peacocks.
So,
that's kind of neat. I shot my first iguana that night, too.
Mm-hmm.
And... it was kind of weird, and it made Brian weird right away. And ever since then, he's hated iguanas, but it had like 50 ticks. For some reason, this iguana had a bunch of ticks on it.
Doesn't that sound delicious?
The forbidden gusher. Yeah.
Brian, Yeah. What'd you when we asked you to hop on this trip, or when we ended up knowing you were going to be on this trip, what'd you think that is the iguana hunting different than you thought it was going
to
be?
It had no appeal to me.
Really?
It was, you know, you guys talked about it a couple times, and it kind of got more and more interesting to me. And, you know, I don't know what we were doing that day, but you guys were talking about putting a boat in a canal and traveling up and down and shooting these iguanas with airsoft guns.
No, not airsoft guns.
Pellet guns.
Yeah, air rifles.
Air rifles, whatever you want to call them.
Airsoft guns shoot a plastic thing.
Yeah. And we ended up with some pretty awesome air rifles, which I think we're going to release a separate podcast at some point that kind of gives you a lowdown on these things. But we won't talk too much about them. But they're not just your, like, standard kind of Walmart pellet gun.
Yeah, you couldn't go to Bass Pro and buy this.
Yeah.
It's like one of them deals where you have to decide, I'm going to spend a bunch of money on an air gun instead of buying a real somebody might get offended, but instead of buying a, combustible expansion rifle, right, or something, whatever mm-hmm. it may be. Yeah. These were loaners, of course, and we were thankful for them. What's it, Danny FL, right?
Donnie
FL, that's it, Donnie FL. Just to give a little credit where credit's due, Donnie loaned us some air guns, so if you're in Central Florida, hit them up. But anyways, you're going somewhere with that.
Well, Brian was kind of telling us if it was different or the same as he kind of expected.
It was everything I expected.
Yeah?
I thought you weren't expecting much.
No, I wasn't. It wasn't something that I really ever cared to do.
Yeah.
But after you guys talked about it and was kind of, this is all DIY.
Mm-hmm.
And that was appealing to me. But the way you guys put it out there is exactly how it happened.
Yeah.
And yeah. It made it enjoyable.
You didn't know if you wanted to do it, and you ended up being the first one to shoot one.
I loved it. Yeah. It was a neat time. And
your boys can hype some stuff and make it sound exciting for sure.
It was fun.
Yeah. It was, man. It's really hard to see them things. Like, we got to where we
could spot.
Yeah, when you spot one, it's like that's like half the game.
I don't know that I ever spotted one first.
Yeah,
Those things really blend in good.
They do, man. It's like I said, spotting them was half the battle. Once you spot one, you kind of felt like you did something. And then, you know, a lot of times you were going to get a shot. And they're so camouflaged, and they know that they kind of sit still, you know, and don't move until you get really close, it seems like, as much. And it just kind of depends, you know. They get kind of nervous if you turn that boat around or whatever. But anyway, they were... You know, we were able to kind of feel, you know, pretty, we're kind of a pretty remote feeling area, and we were hunting these things in water, essentially, mangroves, and these things are hanging over the side. This is going to be all videoed, so we're going to make a video out of this. I imagine it'll probably land on the Meat Eater channel, but I don't know for sure. So anyway, something to keep your eye peeled for, but... It was, you know, there's a small, like a very tiny spot that you have to hit them pretty much if you want to recover the iguana. Can you talk about that a little bit, Eric?
Yeah, it's, well, I didn't shoot any, but it's between the eye and, I don't know, would you call it their ear?
Yeah.
Yeah. So because you got the rundown, you were the one who picked up the air guns, so that's why I was asking you, is you kind of got the rundown from them on this.
You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land? Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today. Because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth. Hey everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right, join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29th, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30th, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1st, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.
That ear is really, it's not like an ear lobe. It's like a, like almost like a sound dish.
It's like,
you know what I mean?
The eardrum is exposed on the outside kind
of
deal.
Yeah, it's like a, it's kind of got a little sunk in spot or whatever. And you're trying to shoot, I mean, how big is that? That's like an inch and a half.
If right? that, right?
Yeah, I think you probably have, depending on the size of the guan, but. We call these things a lot of things, right? So when I say guan, I mean iguana. But guaners, guans, Andre, iguana, whatever. They always something funny to say. Yeah. But, like, at the most an inch and a half on a really big one, and then your elevation is probably a half inch.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. Your left and right, so you got a little more play. But it's like, it's like a 12 ring on a target, you know, that's as big as you're shooting at something.
And it's not that easy, because when you're in a boat and you got to know your distance, and if you're floating in a boat towards them, you can easily lose yardage there.
Here's the thing that I was noticing on these iguanas, guys, and tell me if I'm wrong. The air guns were awesome, but sometimes the scope made it a little difficult.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, with the focusing. And I feel as if in the boat we were getting closer to the iguanas than a lot of people do. Like, because some people walk around and shoot these things like in subdivisions and stuff, and we didn't have that permission to do something like that. So, you know, we were relegated to the boat. But it meant that we got real close to some of them, and that made it a little bit difficult. Mm-hmm. I almost feel like I'd have been not on all of them, and I liked the air guns. I'm not saying I didn't, but I just kind of wonder if I could have used an open sight and done a little bit better at like 8 yards or something.
Yeah.
Than having to, make sure it's like 15.
Area.
I think the distance fluctuated so much that, you know, it was kind of difficult. You would set your scope for 10 yards, and the next thing you know, you're 6 yards from them.
We started to kind of dial the system though.
Yeah,
we figured out like there was some 8 and 9 yard shots we were taking and stuff, and we were like, man, that like. I would rather take a 12 to 14 yarder, you know, like let's try to back off just a few yards, which it sounds ridiculous, but like that's, you know, in these smaller canals, like that is a distance to consider, and it gives you just a little more time as you go by in the boat or whatever, that you're not having to swing on this thing really hard. And, you know, we're in the boat with six dudes. So like, it's like everybody be extremely still, don't move, because if you move, the boat's going to move around, you know. And it was very difficult at first, but I think we dialed it in to where we were understanding that like 12 to 15 yards was a good distance. We would work like into the current with a trolling motor so that, you know, you could kind of, you weren't like flying by it, mm-hmm. and you weren't having to swing, and there weren't leaves getting in the way.
You
and
could
all
almost
that.
Stall out for like 12 seconds. You know, at least I'm sure you're never not motionless, but there's kind of like a bell curve of a hump there where like you're, or probably more of a valley instead of bell curve, but like a time when you're not really moving a whole lot, and at least as a gunner, you could kind of predict the movement of the boat or whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
I noticed that. Absolutely. Golly, what's going on here? Sorry, there's just cops and stuff going wild on some people who are also navigating their way around this world. Being on a really solid rest made a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you do not want to take an offhand shot at an iguana.
Yeah, we were sitting down using the gunnels or mm-hmm. whatever, and shooting off of those, and these scopes were sweet. But you definitely, like, we had rangefinders because there's a dope chart for these mm-hmm. for these things. And so what you have is, like, you've got the scope sitting up like 2 or 3 inches above where the bullet's coming out. So for the first, like, you know, depending on where zero is, sometimes it was like, a lot of times it'd be like 30 yards. It depended on which gun we were using. But like one of the guns was like 30 yards. So until you get to 30, that bullet is still rising, essentially. So if you're shooting an iguana at 10 yards, you might have to either, you know, you're going to have to move your dope to like 4 or something, you know. Mm-hmm. And so you, and then if you move to, if the boat floats in another 3 yards, it makes enough of a difference because of your elevation that you're not going to make a very good shot. Mm-hmm. So it was really, actually really difficult because one guy had the dope charts. That was KC on his phone. And then the rest of us kind of had to like refer to him every time we're kind of getting up, and you would like, you'd be like, okay, 15 is this, 10 is this, you know, 20 is that or whatever. And then you would kind of have those memorized, or hopefully try to, and if not, ask. And then you also are trying to make sure the boat is navigated to the right spot. If you drift a yard or so, like, or a couple yards, then your rangefinder is a different guy who's calling out ranges or whatever, and making sure that, you know, as the boat drifts, that you know, oh, we're at 12 now, not 10 or not 9 or whatever. So it was just like, it was really challenging, actually. But I liked it. It was cool because you're kind of working as a team mm-hmm. to try to get these iguanas. You
that
know?
Was a really neat aspect of it, is like we were all rotating, shooting. And then one guy would be kind of the troll motor man. Another guy would be like the dip net guy in case it fell in the water. And so, like, everybody kind of had this job, and we just kind of all rotated through it. And it was pretty exciting once, like, a good hit happened on an iguana, because then it was like, oh, let's go get it, you know.
And those things, there's never a spot where you stone them, right? Like, they always flip out for a second.
Yeah, pretty much. Because reptiles have a very simple brain. They essentially have like a brain stem, like we do, but that's all they got. And so you're not, what comes along with that is a central nervous system that kind of fills in the gaps. So they can kind of function without pretty much all their brain, or at least their body is doing some stuff, you know. It's like, which was the opposite of my turkey this past week. Like, he just didn't move one single bit, and iguanas are never like that. Even if you do smoke them, they, like, do this back arch kind of thing, and then they'll fall out of the tree or whatever. I did notice they did the squirrel thing every once in a while, where, like, their claws, they'd be out of it, but their claws were still kind of stuck.
Yeah, that's weird.
And that actually was a good thing when that happened.
Oh, yeah. We're kind of hunting all exotic, invasive species, but it was pretty much iguanas and what's the other?
Basilisk lizards.
They run on water. You may have seen them on like Discovery Channel or Planet Earth or something like that. But those are also non-native invasives down there. So we were able to shoot. Actually, I think it was Brian shot a pretty big one, and it got down in the mangroves and couldn't get it.
Yeah, that was a pretty big one. That was
they
cool.
They fell in some very tough spots.
They did, man. That was disappointing because there were some big ones that fell in. We couldn't. They would like float down the current before we could get to them or something, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was one of those deals where, you know, y'all are, if you're listening to this, you know us pretty good. We ain't trying to do anything shady or waste anything, but, you know, this is the invasive species thing, and that's kind of the whole pretense behind the whole deal. They ain't supposed to be here. So taking one out of the ecological scenario is what you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And then being able to harvest one or whatever you want to call it is like icing on the cake, right? Yeah. So you can go out there, shoot 100 iguanas, not recover any of them, and I don't – that's a good thing for the environment.
Yeah, right? PJ said the females will carry like 60 eggs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt the eggs in one of them too. They're weird. They do this thing kind of like, I guess, like birds do, where it's one egg a day for X number of days or whatever. So they just have this, you know, maybe it's like a fallopian tube or something that's just full of just eggs at different development stages or something, you know, inside of their bodies.
Yeah.
Kind of strange. And also the thing with them as well is they're egg eaters. So you look at the natural birds. Florida is one of a really important bird area because they come across the Gulf, the Yucatan, from the Yucatan, and they fly in like it's one of the flyways, right? You have the flyway through Texas and you have the flyway through Florida for at least songbirds, and a lot of them nest here, right? And then you have a lot of other stuff like an Osceola turkey. I don't know if there is a conflict there or not. I haven't explored that too much, but essentially the iguanas are eating people out of house and home, both the animals around and the gardens and stuff. And it sounds like there's some opportunity maybe for some door knocking on some guans.
For sure.
And we might look into that in the future because I'm not above doing that again.
Yeah. Talk real quick about the different sizes versus color phases and that kind of thing.
Well, we ain't got it all figured out yet, but they are unique and a lot of them look different. And it seems to me like the tiny iguanas are really bright green most of the time. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you see a real bright green one, it's pretty small. And the pretty small ones, as far as eating goes, aren't really worth shooting because they're like chameleon size. You know, they're pretty small.
So you're going to eat these things.
Yeah, that's the plan. That is the plan. Brian's not.
Yeah, yeah.
But I am for sure. I imagine it's going to be a lot like frog legs.
Yeah.
But those tiny ones are green. I think every iguana has the ability to be pretty dark, brown, or black. And I think when they're doing that, they're trying to warm up. We've seen some really big green ones. Then, like, if you want to talk about the booners, the dominant male alphas are going to be orange. And they look like Godzilla dinosaur suckers, man.
Yeah.
We didn't see any of those hunting, and it made me sad.
We saw we actually shot a couple that were on the verge.
Yeah, we shot a couple that had a little orange to them. They're kind of mixed.
Yeah.
They're pretty big. I mean, I don't know. The biggest ones we shot were probably 4.5 foot long with tail, something like that.
Yeah.
And they get up like 6 foot range. But we, on the way to South Florida, like deep, like the Keys, we saw a couple donkeys, man. I mean, dude. Big some guns.
They got that like a gnarly throat patch thing that's going on too. It's like, you know, it's almost like waving a flag, you know, or whatever, man. It's big old throat patch.
Yeah, they do a thing too with their head.
Yeah.
Where like if they feel threatened and they're a dominant critter, they'll like do this thing where they like head bob. And I think it's showing off that little throaty thing.
Yeah, they got some weird movements, man.
Yeah.
But they we got another podcast, I think, that will come out that we did with our buddy PJ, who Eric mentioned earlier. And he'll talk more about the guns and some of the other, like, human iguana conflict stuff. And it's pretty interesting stuff. So we won't hit too much more on that. But
Brian wasn't the only mustache to shoot one.
Oh.
You know?
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. I was thinking about it earlier, and I forgot to mention. So our buddy, Mr. J.P. France, who pitches for the Houston Astros, was down in the West Palm area where they do their spring training type stuff. Right? That's what it's called, Eric, right?
Yep.
Spring training. They, you know, are getting ready for the season, which I think starts tomorrow. And that's tomorrow when we're recording this podcast. But anyway, he was down doing some training with the Astros. They were playing some games. They played the Cardinals.
Yeah. Beat the Cardinals.
Didn't seem like it was too big a deal for them. They handled them pretty well, I think. No, but he decided he had a little extra time one afternoon and came out and smoked the first iguana he shot at.
Yeah, dude. He throws strikes, you know.
He does, man. Smoked some people him. Just have that accuracy thing. He also smoked a turkey with us one time, not on this trip, but on a different trip last season. And
with the boat.
He just accurate dude.
It's a good shot.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So anyway, just fun dude to hang out with. Really, just easy going and good dude. He bought us a big Greek meal at the end of our trip.
How was that Greek food, Brian?
It's just a salad.
You got a cheeseburger?
No chance. I got a cheeseburger at the Greek place.
Well, that cheeseburger looked good. Actually.
It was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks,
JP.
They put that hard griddle crust on it, man.
They did. That was there, flat topped.
Put some
good.
Hummus on it too.
No, nobody eats that.
What'd you have at the Greek?
I did. I'll eat it every now and then.
Yeah.
But
yeah. What'd you have at the Greek place?
I had the best stuff ever.
Me too, man.
It was what's it, tzatziki or whatever the meat's called? I don't know.
It's that goes in the heroes or whatever.
Yeah, it's that roasted stuff that they kind of fillet off of that big old round deal, and just had that and some pita. And well, there's a salad in there. There was something else really. Oh, the rice.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a Greek rice.
I had lemon potatoes, and they were the best potatoes maybe I've ever had.
Mm. That was a good restaurant, man.
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
there's some good eating down here.
Might have to stop back by there tomorrow.
Dude, maybe. I don't
Let
know.
Brian get a burger.
I want some Cuban food, man.
Cute.
God, I love this Cuban food. I can't get off the same thing. I've been getting the same thing every time. It's like a flattened steak, you know. But it's got like
ham
a vinegar. Yeah, Brian always gets a ham sandwich.
I got pulled pork, but both meals that we had, it's, you know, the bread was different. I've never had bread like
you
that.
Enjoyed the second one more.
The second one was amazing.
You've been getting the Cuban sandwich, right? Like the thing.
The first one was a good sandwich, but it was pulled pork wrapped in ham. The bread was like I've never had bread like that. It was good. Don't get me wrong. I just felt like it was a ham and cheese sandwich.
It didn't fill me up.
Well, I've been getting full because
I think
the
Cubans are a little bit smaller than me.
Yeah, that's probably true. But Cubans have a specific rice. It's called moro or moros, depending on who you're talking to. Actually, no roldar. So moros. And it's like black beans and rice, and then some, like, I don't know what it is, like pork jowl or something. It's kind of like a throwaway meat that's in there. It's like a mystery meat. Mm. And boy, let me tell you,
we got a bunch of mystery meats in the cooler.
There ain't nothing mysterious about how tasty that stuff is. It is good, good. Todd got something to go the other day.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. It was handy. I ate it while we were iguana hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I mean, yeah, you can't beat it.
No.
I thought it was good. But
okay, do we need to move on to the key stuff
here?
Yeah,
I think so.
Okay, I could get lost in the sauce on talking about some food, but we made it down to the Florida Keys.
Yeah.
And
y'all were a day late.
I forgot y'all.
You left
day
early. You're welcome. Because Brian, he wasn't going to shoot a turkey. Because he doesn't like turkeys. He says they're dumb.
They're tasty, though.
Yeah. Yeah. But
look at this guy working at 9 working o'clock.
Like
at night.
He's like, there's a fry line. He's getting tan out there. we made it down. Met the guys. Did a little bit of dinking around the first evening. Kind of just sightseeing out of the boat. And then the second day, it was on, brother. It was time to compete. See, Tyler been watching some cool YouTube videos.
Yeah.
And there's been people wearing some fish out from the bridges. And we had decided that we were going to be able to, I mean, I don't even need the boat. I'm going to go fish the bridge.
I mean, they're catching keepers, you know. So, man. I'm like, if I don't catch them as good as them, but still come away with a few keepers, and we're good.
We're talking about cast and catch here, man.
That's right,
That's
man.
What we do. So, Brian and the crew decided to do a little motor boating, and we were gonna try the bridge thing at least once on this trip. So, like, hey, let's have a competition day. Y'all go out in the boat, see what you can get done. Tyler and I will fish the bridges, see what we can get done, and have a little friendly go at things.
It wasn't very friendly.
You know, you're never friendly, Brian. It's the problem with you.
It started friendly and then it got pretty violent quick.
Yeah, well, If we were going by numbers, y'all would have got smoked.
No, I don't know. We had some pretty good numbers, too.
We caught a lot of tinies.
I'm telling you, you don't know. KC pulled up four yellowtails on a sabiki rig.
I did it four at once.
There's only two hooks on there. That's impressive.
And it makes, no, we had some full sabikis before you came along.
We had a six hook.
See, here's the problem, man, is down here in the Keys, there's like a bunch of target fish and target species. And there's sport fish, and then there's like inshore sport fish, and then there's like eaters, and they don't always overlap, but yellowtail snapper are kind of in that tried and true eater category. None of them get real big, but they're, I've never had one. You have, Tyler. They're supposedly like one of the better things to eat in the ocean.
Yeah.
So our goal was to catch some of these little buggers. And we did. It just so happens that they have to be 12 inches long. I mean, the biggest one we caught may have touched 8 inches. Yeah. I doubt it did. So
I just think it's a time of year thing, man. I think because it sounds like people are catching eaters off the bridges sometimes, but I don't know. It may just be a time when the big ones come into that, you know, type of habitat.
Yeah, or, I don't know what it's about, man. But we had a hard time catching big fish. Now, seeing big fish, boy, howdy.
Yeah.
You can see some big fish in the Florida Keys because the water's real clear and there's all these bridges and structure. And you know what's really unique about the Keys proper, like where the highway is and stuff, is that you have two very large bodies of water. Like one of them is an ocean, right? The Atlantic Ocean and the Gulf of Mexico. And they are exchanging water on tides. And so what makes the Keys really unique is not the fact that they are islands, but the fact that it's a big old ridge that runs from the tip of Florida way out into the middle of the water. And whenever the tide movement happens, it's really, really ripping. Like, for this far down in the southern world, at least I would say. So it's not so much that the water around here is good because, and it might be because it's clear, but it's because you have such an exchange of nutrients and strong currents that move that then give big fish a reason to be in a place. And sure enough, the sightings were there, huh?
Dude, it's almost hideous, the amount of ginormous tarpon.
They're the size of humans.
Yeah.
Like, I saw tarpon that I was like, that is bigger than me.
I don't want to be in the water with that thing.
I guarantee you.
Scary, dude. So we spent that morning on the bridge and looking at giant tarpon, trying to catch them. And we kind of got to the point where we were like, okay, this is like, I don't know what to call it, but it's like a, it's almost like, what do you call it, the red herring or whatever.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah. That's a good one, man.
It's like, man, it's not a possibility, you know, to catch these things almost. Like,
there was a lady who was kind of making fun of me. She's being nice and fun, but she was like, you got to catch those tarpon? And I was like, well, I have to try. I can't not try. And then we took the walk of shame out of there. And yeah. She was like, well, how'd you hear the tarpon news? And I said a whole lot of things to them. But that's about it.
And, you know, one thing that I've picked up through some of my research is that I think those tarpon are just easier to catch at night. I think they feed a lot at night.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But that's we fished for tarpon for a bunch. We caught a bunch of little tiny yellowtail snapper and other species like grunts and stuff like that.
I mean, what's really neat about this is a lot of these fish are pretty.
Yeah, they are.
So, like, a grunt is kind of like a dink that you just catch along the way. But you go to look at a grunt, and he's, like, got all kinds of crazy blues and all this stuff. It's kind of like the whole bluegill thing, you know, or, like, long-eared sunfish thing. You just think they're perch, but really, like, you start looking at them, and, man, they're beautiful.
Yeah, for sure. And we caught a bunch of those little, I mean, tons of those little fish. We didn't catch any big fish. And essentially spent the entire day working hard to catch fish. And
why were y'all working so hard?
I would say it's because we were playing from behind.
We got the fire, Brian. We want to win.
We do, but we were really just like fishing.
What, did y'all lay the rules out there for this?
So it was supposed to be most keepers wins.
No.
The rules are Tyler
these guys
and KC
are avoiding what really
happens. It's pretty much most keepers wins, but there was a point system for, you know, obviously, like, if you ended up catching a blue marlin, you'd probably win the whole thing, right? Yeah. But if you caught a keeper, you know, keeper barracuda, you probably wouldn't get that many points, right? Because there's a lot of them around, and it takes a 15-incher, which is pretty easy to get. But you guys just caught a few keepers, right?
The winners will take it from here.
Let's see. Let's see what you got.
So, that morning they had come up with this competition, and we're pretty excited to get after it. We quickly learned that they put a big workload on us. So they dumped all six coolers on the trailer, made us fill them with ice. Well, they were already heading out.
What are you
so they had about an hour
listen,
and a half head start on
you
us.
Guys.
They then
Ryan,
caused a wreck on the bridge and made us go the long way.
Nothing about unloading and loading vehicles, man. You've been complaining about
hey,
that
hold
the whole
on,
trip.
Guys, let me just tell the story.
Yeah, go ahead.
They made us go the long way around. And we get here. And we had to get gas. We had to get bait.
Y'all beat us.
We had to get some things. Gosh. Y'all say that. I don't think that's what really happened.
Absolutely.
Y'all left an hour before us. So we were kind of playing from behind time-wise. And we had a time. What was the original time before y'all changed it?
Five. Yeah, five.
So
5
o'clock was the end of the competition. We hit en route to an area that we were going to stay the night at. And it was an hour and I think 45 minutes away. So that was going to cut hugely into our fishing time. Is that a thing?
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
After the 2016 campaign. You know,
this,
sure.
you guys, know this is my story.
You were
Let
fishing 2 hours before us, for sure.
We went to a closer boat ramp. It was an area that I hadn't really map scouted. So the other area I'd been on X, and I've looked around a lot, dropped a bunch of good pins.
What are you doing?
This was a new area, and, you know, we didn't really know what to do, but we got there. I got on X, got to looking at a couple of things. New structure was going to be key. There were some big mangroves areas that we were going to try to fish. And I really knew that we could catch mangrove snapper on these mangroves and rack up some points pretty quick. So we fished our way kind of through some residential stuff, some deeper channels. What did you catch, Eric? Some barracuda right off the bat?
Yeah, I caught a barracuda.
We were catching a couple of barracuda, but we noticed that the mangroves on the real shallow flats that didn't have much water under them weren't really holding many snappers. So we found a channel, and it was a creek that kind of ran through this big mangrove area, and it was crystal clear water. It's about 5-6 foot deep, and we got in there, and there were so many fish.
There was a bunch of snook that we tried to catch.
Huge snook. They would not look at our shrimp. Lures, soft plastics, we threw everything at them, and they were not having it.
Because you're chunking 50-pound braid.
No, we were using 15-pound braid with 15-pound mono. Guys, y'all weren't even there. Tarpon was really cool. I've never seen juvenile tarpon like that. You know, they were maybe the 10 to 15-pound range.
You mean those ladyfish?
Yeah, they kind of look like a ladyfish. You know, I've caught some big ladyfish, but they
You know what the other nickname is for ladyfish?
A 10-pounder.
It's what?
That's a common name
it's
for ladyfish.
A 10-pounder? Like a 10-pound tarpon?
Yeah.
They look like them.
Poor man's tarpon.
So
I love catching ladyfish.
Parrotfish. What else did we see? We've seen some nurse sharks.
Yeah.
Some barracuda in
Saw
there.
Two manatees.
Didn't y'all catch
manatees.
A bonnethead at one point?
Yep.
That was the day before, though.
That was the day before.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was a really cool ecosystem in these little rivers and really clear water, and we were catching mangrove snapper at will. As soon as you drop it in, you would catch them. But they were all around the 8-inch mark.
They got to be 10 to keep.
They made it tough. We fished our way through, and it was really windy. I think we had gusts of 25 miles an hour that day, and we were in Pop's boat in the ocean battling it out. So we left from there and went to a bigger channel and anchored up. Also really clear water, and I think those bigger mangrove snapper are pretty smart, and the heavier line, and if they see you, they push back in those mangroves so far, you're not catching them.
Mm-hmm.
But what do we manage to catch?
Like I think points wise, I think we only scored like 5 or 6.
Well,
the only keeper y'all took, got guys. That day was the lane snapper that Eric caught, right?
No, we had three mangroves. We caught, I don't know, probably 15 barracuda. We kept them.
Did you really?
Oh, that's right. There were a few snapper that they cleaned. Yeah. I forgot about that.
And y'all didn't keep the barracuda for whatever reason.
And then from there, I've always wanted to dive the Keys for lobster. So on our way back to the boat ramp closed at 6. We started working our way back, and we were on a dredged canal, and it was real ledgy, and I decided to get in and dive for lobster, and right off the bat found one and learned that the tickle stick, which is an aluminum, probably quarter inch pole that kind of has a bend at the end and a snare on the other end, you put the end of the stick in and you draw these lobster out of their hole, and you put the snare around them and you cinch it tight. The one I'd bought was, you couldn't manually cinch it. It had just a snare on the end, and I would put it around. I put it around the lobster and try to like put tension on it, and that lobster felt it and he got away from me.
I hate it.
Yeah, that morning I remember Casey saying you need a net.
And if no, I that was had me.
Was it?
Yeah.
If I'd have had a net, I think I'd have got that lobster for sure.
Man, if he hadn't thought I said it, he would have listened.
Yeah.
Since he thought I said it, he didn't listen. Casey,
he makes lots of suggestions throughout the day.
They're usually
and
something to think
just
about.
Take that for what it's worth.
Like, but Tyler
had a really,
water,
really good
water.
Suggestion. And I didn't get a net. I just had that snare. We went to another
don't
spot.
Don't sit in front of the boat where the waves are big.
Things if like you're that. Scared, you don't do it, but you're fine.
I should have just kicked in reverse and just let you just.
I was up there working. I was dropping the anchor.
I almost fell in this week because Brian had Greg move the boat. And Greg's never drove a boat, apparently. And I was on the back of the boat, and Greg just, like, floored it. And I, like, fell into the
boat. That was actually me.
Was it you?
I was trying to show Greg how to put it in gear, and yeah, I got a little excited. If we would have been going backwards, Eric would have been gone.
Like, do it like forward. This. Yeah.
What is it? It's my dad's boat, I think. My dad has one of those hot foots or whatever it is. Do y'all have one of those, Tyler?
Yeah, my dad's boat has a hot foot.
So, like, on those, you do just engage.
Put it all the way down.
With the throttle, like what I call the throttle, but just like the joystick thing. And then you use your foot to give it gas on and off. It just gives you more control. But with my boat, you don't have all that extra control. You just kind of use that handle. And sure enough, it gives it to it, huh, Brian?
It does. Definitely does. And then from there, we drove an hour to the house. We gave them another hour and a half to try to catch up. And
man, listen.
You know what's sad is after this whole competition thing, these guys never owned up to the winners.
We're owning up right now. We gave
this is what the plan is. And then, that's why we're on the podcast, Brian.
There was no, like, hey, congratulations, guys.
Let's just talk about why it's not probably going to be on video. It's because y'all go out and just jack around and don't video, and there's not a whole lot going on. We didn't catch nothing, so
how do you know
the guys who were actually going to make a video? You know, we didn't catch nothing.
They threw down on some video. I've seen you, Brian. You literally caught a brand new fish in the boat the other day, and instead of showing it to the camera, you just threw it out in the water.
Guys,
hey, we haven't seen this
learning.
Fish yet.
He's learning.
This is newer to me. And
yep, that's what I'm saying. So,
you know, I didn't know y'all wanted to turn around with a 6-inch
Brian's what you call Pro-Am. You ever heard of the Pro-Am?
Yeah,
production amateur. That's Brian.
We're going to get there.
The thing is,
we can't all be as good.
The thing is Brian's a fireman, so, like, he is go, go, go. Like, I got to go put out the fire right now.
Yeah, I'm go, go, go anyways. And we have some peatballs on this crew.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes it takes patience to catch them fishes.
Yeah. We had no problem doing that.
People get to retire for a reason, though.
Right. How many fish would y'all guess y'all caught the first day?
A dillion. For sure.
Would you say 150?
Dillion.
No, I would say 150.
I bet
we, I said between, we, there's no way we caught 150.
No, Brian.
Well, that is not a doubler. Maybe worse.
I asked them what they caught.
I know
what
they caught. For sure.
What? Not to say anything about us.
Well, he said they paid $100. They said $299 at the day's end. We got one for $109 plus tax tonight at the same place. That's a tripler.
I had my co-pilot. So
okay.
These guys wanted to stay and chase these dumb turkeys around.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wanted to go fishing.
Uh-huh.
So me and my co-pilot left. I'm not going to mention his name, but he's probably on this podcast. And I was like, hey, find us a place along the way that we can stay. And we kind of, you know, we did the VRBO and the Airbnb and...
Eric's like, we, Ritz we settled on the way.
We let's not forget. Let's not forget. It's a Saturday night in Miami
at 8 o'clock at night
during spring break.
Y'all stayed in Miami,
but close to it.
Yeah.
You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today. Because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
Okay.
Yeah, it did.
So, yeah, you made
it. Yeah, it worked out.
So here's the deal. Mm-hmm. Brian and Eric won the fishing competition.
Yeah.
We never established what the reward was. So, I guess, congratulations, guys.
I really wanted y'all to get us a key lime pie.
Oh, my gosh.
We're idiots.
What a bunch of losers.
No, why did you remind me of that?
We were supposed to get one. Secretly hoping y'all were going to surprise us with one.
We just passed a key lime factory.
Yeah.
Oh, my 10 miles
ago. I'm an idiot.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
There's probably a good one up here somewhere.
We'll have to come back. Yeah. There's that.
Oh, that hurts my heart.
I guarantee you, man. So, day two, we decide to, you know, join forces like Captain Planet and just all group up together and just go give the fish everything we had.
In the boat.
And we did it. We gave them everything we had
day. Man. We worked hard.
And started out with some pretty cool experiences. I mean, you know, I don't guess we should chronicle the whole day, but yeah. Tyler, you had a highlight that morning that may have been the highlight of our trip.
Dude, I think it was the coolest thing I've ever probably hooked and had on. We're drifting. It's really windy, and we're drifting over this flat that's got a bunch of like really humpy grass in it, like these big clumps, you know. And then there's on the back side of them, it's just.
But it's a little bit deeper flat.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's like 2 or 3 foot deep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We're drifting over this. All of a sudden, some of the guys are coming back with some half baits, and we're seeing some barracudas jumping and not jumping but chasing baits. And they're probably like a lot of them are like 20 inches or smaller maybe, and so I've got a fly rod with me, a 10 weight fly rod, and I had bought a couple of barracuda. They call them I can't think of the name, but it's a cuda bait that's kind of big profile, and so I tie this thing on, and KC's like, you might want to put a metal leader on. And I was like, oh man, because they had just caught one. I was like, was your line messed up? No, hooked him in the corner of the mouth. Okay, well, I just won't do it right now. I'm in a hurry to get a bait out, you know, and I don't really know how to do a wire leader, so I'm just not going to bother people. I'm going to just fish. Well, I go to flinging this thing. KC's kind of being my guide because the wind is nuts.
We're pretty good because I have a long lead on my trolling motor control panel, so I can stand on the back of the boat and kind of control the trolling motor while you are on the front of the boat casting.
Yeah. Well, I get a couple of like follows from some smaller ones or whatever, and I'm just you know, it's just haywire because it's so windy. Your line's just going everywhere, and you're trying not to get it hung on everything. You're trying to strip it fast, but you're blowing towards your bait because you just cast it downwind. Well, long story short, I'm ripping this thing in, and I get pretty close to the boat, and all of a sudden, it's like just, I mean, it's crystal clear. All of a sudden, this dadgum 4-foot dog comes out and just eats my bait like 10 foot in front of us. And me and Casey are like, oh! And he's just
freaking out, man.
He had just like completely engulfed this bait. He thought he had just ate something whole, right?
I think they are just used to stoning things.
Yeah,
I think so. So they don't too. Like grab it and run off.
That's
you
right.
Know?
They don't hit it like that. So I can't feel him at all. And I'm in the line is still slack because it's just so windy. So I strip a couple of strips really quick and barely kind of get a good hook into him. I didn't really get much of a set at all. And he turns out once he realizes he's hooked and goes back behind the boat. It would blow your mind how fast this happens.
It's like pretty sick.
And this footage, it's all on camera. And you can see my line rip through the water. And I'm like, here's the thing you don't understand. I mean, they did when they were in a boat, but this fish is 7 or 8 yards out in front of where my line is ripping probably or more as it's ripping through the water. There's so much tension, and he's going so fast that the line is in just like a huge loop and ripping through the water. I mean, it was awesome, dude. And I counted it on video. In 5 seconds, I say he's into the backing already to the camera. I mean, he took, like, ripped a bunch of line off in no time. He gets out there like, I don't know, 150 yards or something stupid. I mean, way out there. And then just pulls out and breaks my line or whatever. And I was pretty sad at that point. I put on a metal leader. But it was the coolest fish.
Another
coolest
Casey
fish.
Suggestion.
Yeah. It was a good suggestion. I just didn't think I was going to hook a 4-footer, you know, yeah. Whatever. And anyway, it was cool, though. I was really, like, I would do that every day, man, and have fun doing it.
Yep. That was pretty cool, dude. And then the rest of the day we kind of spent exploring mangroves. We smoked the mangrove snapper. It mm-hmm. was awesome. They're kind of difficult because there's a lot of snapper that are under, but there's dillions of them. So you're catching a bunch.
Yeah.
And then we went off, not really offshore, but kind of out into the Gulf. Didn't have a lot of success there. And then finished the day in a canal and actually caught some pretty nice fish there as well. And then had a really long trip back in the dark because we stopped to try to fish for tarpon under the lights.
There were some tight dudes that on that trip back, man.
Dude.
there was some anxiety.
I got pretty anxious at one point in time myself. It was just it's there's times when you're the boat captain that like it's
you wish you weren't.
Yeah, that's right. That's it.
I'll tell you, I was a little bit tight at first, and then I was like, oh, I think we're good. And then
it was never dangerous or harrowing.
You know when I got real tight?
When we saw those ghost ships out there?
Yeah, when we finally, I had suggested, I was like, hey, should we get the spotlight out? And, you know, everybody's like, no, we're good, you know. Well, we stopped, tried to catch some tarpon under some lights, and it got real dark. So we decided finally to pull the lights out as we got closer to one of the bridges we were going to go under. And we're going to make this big loop around this peninsula and come back into our place where we were staying. And we shine, and there is a sailboat just anchored up out there with no lights on in the middle of this dark bay. And things seem to, like, get real quiet and tone down out in the water in the Keys, like, early. Like, it's not like a thing.
We
it doesn't seem
why.
To be a thing.
Do you mean people? Because the boat ramps all close at 4:30 to 6.
Guaranteed, dude.
So everybody's off the water. Yeah, it's kind of a thing. People kind of wrap it up early. Yeah.
But that was when I got tired, man.
It was never real dangerous except for that.
We made it back at 10 o'clock, though.
You're in an unfamiliar water.
Yeah.
And there is 6 inches of water within 100 yards of you at all times.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. You could run aground.
Extremely careful.
I was navigating via Onyx at this point in time, too, because, you know, there's no channel marked or anything. So I'm just following that. And it worked pretty good. It was not easy, but it was doable. And then that was our full day, right? And then we had 2 day, which we tried to go for some bigger fish. And we did such a thing. Brian, I think Brian had the best day today.
I had a great day.
Y'all definitely tore me
Brian
up.
Brian smoked them. I don't know. You ended on a pretty high note.
I had a good note to end on, for sure.
But let's see, you caught a Jack Crevalle. It was pretty cool.
I broke that first fish. I don't know what it was, but I broke off on him on a shrimp right as soon as we got anchored up.
Mm-hmm.
Then I picked up a swim bait, caught a Jack Crevalle, caught a pretty good red grouper.
No, that thing was cool.
Yeah.
So the Keys has, Florida in general, I guess you could say, has like some real specific regulations. It's one of the greatest fisheries in the world, and one could say that they keep a tight rein on things so they can keep it that way. And grouper are all out of season right now, which, you know, for a freshwater guy, we don't really have seasons on any fish that I can think of. Is there anything like that, Tyler?
Man, I can't think of anything offhand.
I don't think there
really
is for us, at least.
There's seasons when you have to keep every crappie you catch in the winter and stuff.
I never really dealt with that, but that is a thing.
What makes this fishery, most of your open fishing, I guess, is like this, but any cast, you can catch a fish that you've probably never seen.
Yeah, that's the
and you're
dream.
Looking up size limits, lengths, and bag limits on nearly everything you catch because you're catching so many different fish throughout the day. And
you know,
that
Florida
was new
has
to
this
me.
Weird way of writing their regulations too that I've never seen, and I'm not sure if I like it or don't like it. I know it was difficult on this trip. I just wonder if it might just be because I'm not used to looking things up this way. But most game or fish departments or game and fish departments tell you what you can't do. Can't do this, can't do that, illegal to do this, no on that. Well, this, like everything we encountered this past week was you can do this and then no mention of what you can't do. So you're always like, well, am I just not seeing where there's a regulation saying you can't do this? But it's always like, it's like a positive spin to it or whatever. It's like, here's some things you can do.
One of the real difficult things for us on this trip is it'd be nice to see, here's the things you can't use for bait.
Yeah.
And all the other things you can use for bait. And there's no answer to that. So, like, you'll catch this little fish that's small, and you're like, I'd like to use that for bait. And then you're like, well, I don't know if you can. It's got, like, some blue stuff on it. Kind of looks pretty. They may or may not like that, you know.
Yeah, nobody's willing to stick their neck out on the forums either, you know, and say, hey, I use these all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
The grouper or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, that kind of gets to be weird. So we used a lot of bait shrimp, and they worked pretty good. In fact, I caught a what we think was a young Goliath grouper on a shrimp today, which I thought was weird. I thought it was going to be the keeper mangrove we've been looking for.
Yeah.
I caught a mangrove today.
No, mutton.
Mutton, excuse me. Yeah. I caught a mutton today that we were pumped about.
Yeah.
I was like, I gave you a high five. It ended up being an under.
We all
you know?
High five.
We thought, I was like, oh, this is sick. And they're like, oh, yeah, that'll be 18. Oh, no.
Yeah.
It's 16 and a half. It was a nice fish. It was the biggest snapper we'd seen all trip.
Yeah.
The Goliath, though, for me, was probably the highlight of my trip just because – I mean, I've been watching people catch them things since they were called G-fish, you know, and just I remember watching a video. I can't remember who it was. It might have been Jose Wahebe. They were catching Goliath groupers, and then they decided to dive for them. And one Goliath grouper came up and, like, looked at him like he was going to try him out. And ever since then, I was like, oh, those are cool. Because, you know, they get to be the size of Volkswagen Beetles, right? Like, they get to be monstrous. That's why they're called Goliath groupers. And so, anyways, that was a pretty neat catch for me.
Yeah, for sure. We had some cool – so you caught that hogfish today, too. That was neat. Eric hooked up on something, didn't you?
Yep. I've caught big fish in my life, but I would
10 pound like, bass, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I would like in the whitetail world, I've caught a lot of 125 inch fish, but nothing real big. And so I hooked into this, and it's like I know not to reel when it's pulling, but like it was pulling and stopped for like a second. I was like, okay, I can reel, but it's already pulling again. And I did something dumb too. right before I cast it, because I got a new pole and I was messing with my drag, and I loosened it quite a bit and hooked onto that fish and thought I needed to tighten the drag. And so I started to tighten, and that's when he broke off. But I've never hooked into a fish like that where it just kept pulling.
That was a drag ripper, man. It was pretty cool. So what'd you catch that on?
I was using swim bait pretty much all week.
Yeah.
I got tennis elbow right now from it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, make you kind of tired, eh?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. We had a good outing in the boat, and we decided we were going to try something different. We were going to get out of the water and go look for a different bridge to fish with the boat. Long story short, all these ramps are closing early. We come to find out we can't really get anywhere and fish what we were wanting to fish with a bridge-wise with a boat. So we are going to either make an hour and a half or so and try to get launched at a place that you can fish until dark pretty much, or we're going to just...
Somewhere we haven't been at all.
Yeah.
Somewhere we haven't been. Another detail on that, yeah.
Or we're going to fish a bridge that we've been on. Well, we go to fish in one of the bridges that we've been on, and it was tough. The current was really, really, really ripping. It's a shallow bridge. We saw a ton of tarpon there the day before, I guess. And then nothing. We didn't see hardly any tarpon when we were there. That was today. This afternoon, we fished for a while.
Oh, by the way, we used chum blocks a lot on this trip. It's kind of a thing I had never done before. And they're pretty effective.
Yeah.
Well, we go out there, and I tie the chum block off, and apparently the current was real strong, and no more chum block within 5 minutes. So,
but you kinda,
my bad, guys.
You kind of looked down really early, and
I
that
did.
Was cool.
That was a neat fish. That was, like, definitely a fish I'm going to show my kids, you know. We caught pig fish. That's another, like, I want to show my kids that fish, you know.
Pork fish. Yeah.
There's a lot of animals, a lot of fish that are named after swine in the ocean. Got porgies, piggy perch. What is this? Okay. Goodness gracious.
But hogfish, all the things, man. But anyway.
What is that cop doing?
So we're fishing this stuff and hoping that the current's going to change and this and that, and a bunch of boats show up and we think that's a sign. Well, it just didn't work. And we were starting to get late in the day, and we're just like kind of burned out on this bridge.
Tyler took a 20-minute nap.
Yeah. I feel like an hour. And then I'm like, man, let's go back. That water was deeper at the other bridge we fished yesterday. So let's go back over there. What do you think? And so we kind of talk about it, mull it over.
We asked each other a dillion times all the different options that we could do.
That's how we do, man.
And it's like, you just don't. It's real hard for me in the fishing world, in our situation at least that we were just in, to say, hey, let's go over there instead of here.
Yeah.
Because, like, we're in the unknown.
Yeah.
And so your decision could be a really bad one.
But we knew it was deeper. We knew there's some big cootas around yesterday. So we decided to go over there. We start walking out on this kind of long bridge, and water looks good. Current's still ripping pretty decent, but not too bad. And Eagle Eye Eric spots some fish on the way out.
I thought it was a dolphin, to be honest. I was like, look at that thing.
That's how big these fish are. And so next thing you know, we're freaking out. It's tarpon. They're everywhere, and they're mondos. Long story short, we can't really get a whole lot to bite. We think we're going to get some live baits so that we can maybe get them to bite. It's starting to get darker. We got a bunch of bait. We still got several live shrimp, and we're trying to get something to happen. And I can't remember if it happened, if Brian hooked up before this,
yeah, he did.
Before I started baiting live shrimp or chumming live shrimp. You had a hookup on, what kind of rig were you using?
I dropped a live shrimp in and had one turn on my bait twice. Mm-hmm. I could see him try to get it, and then he came back, try to get it again. But then, you know, it never happened. Again, for me, you hooked a couple of live baits, and I put one under a float. It was a popping cork. You know, I've fished for tarpon in the past with floats. I put the popping cork on, put about probably a 4-foot monofilament leader, live hooked one of those fish and floated it out in the current, probably 70 yards. And I set my pole down to catch some more live bait. And I heard Greg,
and turn around, and my pole,
it's like
my pole, it was leaning on a concrete ledge that was probably 3.5 foot tall.
It wasn't in a very secure position. It was not chills thinking about it.
My pole raised up, and the bell of my spin cast pole caught this reel from going over the edge, and there was a tarpon on my pole. The line had so much tension, it had flipped my bell over, and it was kind of freelining. And then I flipped my bell back down, and just that much tension, that tarpon was running quick, popped the line. So,
well, we were sad after that, and it started getting darker quickly, and we had maybe half a dozen or 10 live shrimp still. And I was like, okay, I'm going to throw these up current of these tarpon we've been seeing and just see if I can get them excited, right? Let them kick around, these shrimp kick around and excite them. So I throw like 5 shrimp in, and the last one I throw in, I'm looking, and probably a 30 or 40 pounder comes up and just rolls on that shrimp. And I was like, I freaked out, you know. All of a sudden, we're back at it, trying to drift stuff down to them. We work with that group for a while. Nothing happens. It's starting to get a little bit later. And I'm like, all right, if they're going to eat live shrimp, I'm going to throw one free, you know, free line on my new reel and rod and reel that I bought. Pretty heavy duty. And, you know, Greg had said there was a few on the other side of the bridge. So I look over there. I go over there, and I see them. I make a few casts, kind of have a decent drift or two. And then I see these ones kind of come up high in the water column. And so I, like, cast this thing up so I can get it to sink down, you know, to their level or whatever, into the wind. And it starts drifting down. And I can see the path is, like, kind of left of this tarpon. And and as it gets kind of where it should be pretty close, I can't see it anymore. It's sunk down far enough. I see that tarpon turn to the left. And so I let it float for a couple of seconds, thinking he might be getting close to it. And then I just, like, bump the reel around, and I feel a little tension. And I make one more crank, and it was there. And I pull into him pretty hard. And I started freaking out. I was like, I got a fish. I got one on. And he, like, starts doing these head shakes just in the current, just head shaking a couple times. And then finally realizes he's hooked, and I don't have a big enough hook. And he jumps straight out of the water, just like you see him with the head back and gills flared and everything.
Oh,
and
man.
Back down into the water. And kind of makes a loop. He's still not sure he's hooked, I don't think, because my hook was kind of small. And he ends up darting underneath the bridge. And I'm, like, about to fall in the water. I'm hanging so far over the bridge trying to get my make sure my line doesn't cut on the edge of the bridge. You know, I'm pushing my pole way down towards the hole there. And he runs and then shakes his head about 3 times. I can feel it. I can't see it anymore. And the hook pulled. I thought I broke it, but the hook actually pulled out. And that was the end of our Florida Keys trip, pretty much, man. It was now we're headed to Taco Bell somewhere, and hopefully getting some cheesy gordita crunches.
It was a lot of fun, man. I'm glad we did it. And there's definitely some unfinished business to take care of.
For sure. Just jumping a tarpon was awesome, man. Like, I could do that several more times and still be pretty happy, man. But
you're on T.
Anyway, there should be some videos coming out from this trip. I don't know how soon, but we're going to have turkey season come up soon. Be talking a lot of turkeys. I appreciate you guys listening. Thanks, Brian and Eric, for coming and helping and doing all the stuff, man.
Appreciate it, guys.
Mm-hmm. Glad y'all got to do some fishing. Remember, this is your element.
Living it.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, Wild Game Recipes for the Grill, Smoker, Camp Stove, and Campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at the Meat Eater.com. Hope to see you at the show.